When it comes to your sales stack, stop tool hopping and start winning with Nux. Simplify your outbound today at nux.ai/salesgravy. That's nooks.ai/salesgravy.
This is the Sales Gravy Podcast. Hi, I'm Jeb Blunt, best-selling author of Fanatical Prospecting, Objections, Sales EQ, and Inked, and I'm here to help you open more doors, close bigger deals, and rock your commission check.
Welcome back to the Sales Gravy Podcast. I'm Jeb Blunt Jr., and today we have a really, really cool guest. I'm excited for you to listen to today's episode. It's going to be a little heady, but we're also going to take that back down to earth with some great, great scenarios. And we have Jake Stahl on the podcast, who is a neurostrategist and is the CEO of Orchestrate. He's also the new author of Own the Room, which is also accompanied by a podcast called Own the Room. So go listen to that podcast. He's trained more than 10,000 sellers and business leaders and businesses across 47 states and all over the world. And his specific framework called Strata is blending psychology, neuroscience, and what he calls NLP. I am a complete newbie to this, so you're all going to learn along with me. Jake, I really appreciate you joining us today, and I look forward to learning more about what Strata is and how you are applying that in your work and your world to help business leaders really communicate better to those prospects and to their internal teams.
It's an honor to be here. Longtime fan of the show, subscribe to the podcast, really excited to be here. Thank you.
It is my pleasure, and you've given us 5 stars as a review. So just remember, if you're listening to this, give us 5 stars on Spotify, on Apple. If you haven't, go check us out on YouTube. That's youtube.com/salesgravy. You can see us have this conversation in real time. So we have some really cool stuff here. Let's start with Strata. Let's start with what neurostrategy is and just sort of give us the best elevator pitch you can to help us understand what this is before we dive into some ways we apply it to the world that we live in.
Sure. So I'm a firm believer, Jeb, that we all have 2 profiles. We have the one we put on LinkedIn, the one that smiles, you put a hat on it, you comb its hair. But there's another one underneath that makes all the decisions. It's the one that says, I'm afraid to move forward. The price is too high. Not right now. Neurostrategy is a term that I coined and I trademarked. And it's the combination of behavioral psychology, social psychology, and neurolinguistic programming, NLP, to communicate in a method that speaks to the real decision maker, the one that's kind of under our smiley profile.
This is deep. This is the art of communication. This is the place where you exist, is the space between what people hear and then what they do with that information. Help us understand how you started to blend all of these disciplines and then output information for sales professionals and then business professionals in particular.
Sure. So I've been in sales all my life and I love the art. I think it's the greatest profession there is. But I'll be honest with you, I got frustrated with every conversation starting with, hi, how are you? It just annoyed me because it's non-conversation. It leads nowhere. Nobody gives the honest answer and nobody cares about the answer. And yet it's how we all start. So I thought early in my career, how do I break the conditioning? How do I not start with that? And when I started breaking out of how I introduce myself to people and how I greet them, I noticed a dramatic change. So I went to school. I got a degree in psychology. I got a master's certification in neurolinguistic programming. I've studied social psychology so much, somebody owes me an honorary degree. Syracuse, step up. Give me my degree. And I combined it into a way to communicate with people that deals with behavioral triggers, psychological hook points, things that are guaranteed to get a response. And neurostrategy was born.
I think that what I hear you saying is a strategy that many people I know employ passively. You know, when I walk into a room, I think that like in a networking event, the thing that drives me the most is, how do I make this a memorable interaction? And oftentimes that's being a little off the wall. You got to be a little weird. You got to say some things. You got to ask questions that other people don't ask. And I think that this is that connection point where, you know, you're helping people not just be good at that part, you're helping them understand how to be good at it and then take it to the next level. And, you know, I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation. So I wanted to jump into a scenario that I want to give you some space to coach to, given your experience.
Okay.
You're going to be put on the spot here. So I call this one the ghosted perfect fit proposal. So you've got strata, you've got your psychological hook points and where people get distracted and what grabs attention and what sticks with people in their memory. I work with sales teams just like you do all over the world. And one of the most painful things we do as coaches, even as leaders and as salespeople, is we see a rep, especially new ones, and they walk out of a meeting and they're like high-fiving their boss. They're coming to the sales bullpen and they're saying to their team, like, man, this is a slam dunk. This is a layup. Like, I did it. They bought from me. You know, we're just feeling good. And we've all done it. We've all been there. We high-five too early.
Yes, and, absolutely. You know,
and it's because they did genuinely get a really great reaction. So the buyer said, yes, like, we're all in on this. Give us a week, right? We've all heard this. Everything goes dark. There's no emails, no calls, LinkedIn messages. You know, they're read, but, you know, they're not answered. And the rep keeps pushing emails, calls at this buyer, right? They keep trying. And the silence just keeps getting like bigger. Like, it gets loud. I call this loud silence. When you know that they're, know they're listening, but they don't want to talk, which is way more frustrating. And so it's just perfectly stalled, like completely stalled. And this is what pipelines end up looking like, where they have a perfect fit, but the ICP is perfect, but they're just not moving forward. I guess what I want to ask you is, when the deal looks perfect but goes completely dark, how can a seller use your approach, your strata approach, and and the 210 rule to diagnose what really went wrong and then how to re-engage people into a real conversation that either gets a yes or a no at the end of the day? That's all we're looking for. So given that scenario, how do you help sales teams work through this?
The first part of it is looking at the conversation you had. So many times, the first part of strata, the S in strata stands for signal. So what signal did they send us? And many times a representative will miss those subtle signals. Like a buyer will say yes, and then you'll see them look down. Or you see that they start twitching or they're touching their face. You know, a lot of those are insecure signals that people send. And they're telling you in advance, I'm not going to get back to you. I'll say yes, I want to get you off the phone, but I'm just not getting back to you. And the fact is, Jeb, whenever we see a signal like that, we need to understand what we've triggered in them. So the second letter, the T in strata, is what did you trigger in those people? Once you understand that, then it's about a reframe. So how do I make this exact concept come out in a different way that's acceptable to you? So without looking at the communications, without looking at the emails, I'm going to make a bet, and I'd be willing to put cash on this, that if we looked at the video, or we looked at an email, or we looked at the transcript, we would find an indicator that the person on the other side was just not ready to move forward. And this happens more often than not. Jeb, if you consider the fact that 80% of our communication is nonverbal, we're reacting to that 20% that comes in an email or a DM or a voice message, and we're missing 80% of the message. So I would, again, be willing to bet when I walk into a company and they say, Jake, we're getting ghosted, and I look at a call transcript or I watch the video, it's like right there. That's what you missed. Many times, Jeb, and I'm sure you've taught this as well, giving the person permission to say no is 90% of getting them to say yes. And as salespeople, we often don't give them permission to say no. We're so bent on getting those four yeses in a row that we never give them the back door. And let me paint a picture. Jeb, you're in a room, you're sitting in a chair, no windows, one door, and at that door is a guard. What's the only thing you're thinking about while you're sitting in that chair?
I'm never going to get out of here.
Right?
How do I get out of here?
Right. So all you're thinking about is getting out. Now let me give you scenario number two. You're sitting in a room, no windows, sitting in a chair. There's one door with a guard at it. The door behind you is wide open. So you have two doors. Now, are you thinking so much about how to get by the guard?
No. Yeah. You got a way out.
As a matter of fact, you're pretty relaxed, right? It's like, listen, if anything really bad happens, I can get out of here. But we rarely give our customers permission to say that. One of my favorite things to tell reps to say is say to your customer, listen, feel free to say no. If this is not a good fit, let's just call it quits here. And what reps find is that 9 times out of 10, the person goes, no, I'm good. Yeah, let me hear you out. But now you've given them that open door behind them and they're not panicking, thinking about where they need to go. And inevitably, most of those calls do that. Let me give you part B of that answer though, Jay.
I love it. Keep going. I wanted to have more comments, but that was so, so good. So listen to that part. And then this is part two.
This is part two. So the other place this all falls apart is in the follow-up. Many reps are like, I sent you a proposal. You said this week, where are you? Was the cost too high? Was I too much? Don't do that. Instead, send subtle reminders that they owe you without telling them they owe you. Here's a great example. Jeb, you're on the Sales Gravy podcast as the host. I want to get on your podcast. You're ghosting me. I'm just going to send you an email that says, Jeb, Sales Gravy, I saw did awesome this week. Here's your second biggest competitor. And here's an article as to why your podcast is so great. And then I'm just going to send it. Nothing about getting on. Nothing about reminding you. But in your head, Jeb, you're going to go, oh my God, I heard from Jake before. And now he sent me this really cool thing. And if you don't follow up then, I'm going to send you another one that says, Jeb, here's a review from the last podcast I was on. Thought you might find it useful. Hit send. I am selling without selling, but more importantly, I'm giving to you. I'm not asking for anything in return. There's no better way to get someone to respond than not pressuring them and giving to them at the same time.
This is great. I love that this is a part of how you teach sales teams, because it is so hard to pull back down to earth. Like, you can say this to any group of sales reps, but how do I actually do this? Well, look, if you don't give people the back door, if you don't give them the opportunity when you're in the sales process to tell you that they are out, they will tell you that they are in until they don't have to tell you anymore. And then they go away. Because you've been in those situations. You have the pest control guy on the phone and they're just saying things to you. You got to do this. You got to do this. You got to do this. At some point, you just start saying yes because you got other things to go do. And you know that if you just say yes long enough, they'll quit. Like, at some point, they will go away. And that's so crucial. And I want to dive into a few of these, you know, more nuanced parts of what you just talked about really quickly before we move on to the next scenario. You mentioned that subtly telling someone they owe you without saying that they owe you. And this is an art that I don't think many people have mastered, and I don't think I've mastered it. So I want to go into, you know, you're in a sales call. Let's cut up with a small situation. I'm in a sales call. Everything goes well. I'm sort of at the end of the process. And look, I feel like 95% confident this is going to go through. Things, yep. You know, it's holiday season. We're going into the last few months of the quarter of Q4. And, you know, things just sort of get lost. And I don't think that in most cases, like in this scenario, that most people are ignoring you out of malice. They're probably ignoring you because they've got a lot of other things going on. And what I see you from reps is exactly what you're talking about. And even for me, is you hound that person to get a yes or a no. The yes or no is way more important than the connection that you actually have with that person. And yeah. So what you're saying is there's a strategy to providing the note that says, man, Jake emailed me about this podcast and I have not responded to him. And there's some cognitive dissonance there where they know that they should respond to you because that's professional. That's how we operate in society. We typically respond to one another. We don't just ignore people. It's weird to do that. It's just easy now, but it's weird to do that. And then they do owe you an answer. So they also don't want to respond to you, but you create tension there. The percentage chances, right, increase that they're going to respond to the email. Yes, no, get off my lawn, whatever that response is, but you haven't damaged the relationship because they can write you off if you just say, hey, where's this answer? Hey, where's this answer? Hey, where's this answer? They start writing you off like, you suck, man. I don't want to talk to you anymore. I've got this scenario. I'm a sales rep. I'm going through this. And yes, Jeb, JBJ, that sounds so good. And Jake, you're dropping knowledge on this podcast, but what the hell do I do when I'm in this situation? So as a salesperson, like, how do you start going through this? What do you start to gather as a rep?
You need to get them to take ownership. So part of strata, the second T in strata is transfer. So how do I make my idea their idea? My firm belief, Jeb, is we never convince anybody of anything. They just eventually decide it was their idea to begin with. What does that look like? So I'm getting to the end of a call and I think the person's bought in, but I want to make it their idea. So Jeb, let me ask you a question. Now that you've decided to have me on your podcast, tell me how you think the audience will react.
Whoa.
So I'm forcing you to think, okay, I already bought it, and here's what's going to happen. It's called future pacing. So we're getting someone to picture themselves inside the solution. So if I'm selling a shed and the person says, yes, Jake, I want your $5,000 shed, say, listen, I'm glad we got to this point and thank you. But let me ask you this, what's your house going to look like when all that clutter's in the shed? So I'm not just doing a follow-up or, oh, when are you going to commit or when are you going to sign the contract? I want you to own it. And the best way to get you to own it is to have you write your story with my solution in it.
That's a crazy powerful question. So in practice, just really quickly, so just to recap, you ask, you know, you're sort of at that place, you feel like things are going well, maybe you're like 60% sure, but you just want to know, like you just got to the end of the process, you want to know. And you say, Jake, you know, look, I appreciate that we've gotten to this point. It sounds like we're all in alignment here. Let's just take the last few minutes of this conversation and I want to hear what it's going to be like at the other side of this. When we start implementing this, what does that mean to you? How do you think your employees are going to respond to this? How do you think your team is going to respond? How do you think your world is going to change based on, you know, these tools? And then let them have that conversation is so, 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 so powerful. I think that when you start to really have these conversations, what are the typical responses? What are some of the things that you have heard prospects say in response to that question?
Yeah, sometimes you'll get them say, I'm not sure how that's going to look yet. And my response back is, I think you do. I think you have a clear idea of where this is going to go. And my guess is your spider sense is tingling a little bit right now. Tell me what your reservation is. And it's amazing how that shifts gears. It breaks conditioning and it gets them to come back and say, well, Jake, you know, actually, this is a little bit pricier than I had hoped it would be. Awesome. Now yeah. I'm at the exact thing that was going to make you ghost me in 20 minutes. So don't ever hesitate to take something. And if it doesn't work, shift gears. Hey, listen, I saw you look down there for a second. My guess is something caught you off guard. What was it? Don't ever hesitate to grab onto that and make it yours. And then I'll go back to him after that and I'll say, okay, are you set now? Does that feel good? Yes, it does. Perfect. Then tell me how you're going to describe the product to your employees when you roll it out. I'm just curious because I could use that when selling the product. It gets them to own it. Listen, I'm saving you 20% of your time on your emails. I'm just curious, what are you going to do with the extra hour in your day? Get them to own it. Don't ever say, great, sign the contract. I'll follow up with you in 5 days. It's a loser. You're going to get ghosted.
Yeah. So repeat all of that part of the podcast. We're going to get to the next part, though, because I think we got to move on from this so we can spend 16 years how to do all of that. No, that was incredible. Okay. So listen to that. If you're going through your sales process and you're trying to figure out why things aren't getting across the line, those are some fantastic questions and strategies and thought process around what the end of the line should look like for you so that you can start to manage your pipeline and the outcomes a bit better. I'm sure that there's a lot more that we could get into, which we will, but I want to dive into another scenario. You've got a lot of clients just like you, I'm sure, and you work with lots of businesses that have a brilliant, brilliant expert, people who are consultants or, you know, lawyers, for example, people who are fractional leaders and technical founders, people who are really brilliant at their craft. Their clients love their work. I mean, you can see all the love that people have for their work when they get into their business or what they do for them. But the first sales conversation is pretty much a ramble. They're not bringing a lot of net new. They're keeping what they bring in, though, but they're not bringing a lot of net new. They're over-explaining their entire process. They deep dive into like their methodology, their philosophies. They never actually guide the conversation. They sort of just let it happen, which is usually them talking. And then when it's time to get next steps, they sort of like, well, we could explore this together if it makes sense. They walk out of the meeting thinking like I gave them a bunch of value. And the prospector walks out thinking that was a really nice person, but I don't know what they actually do for people. So you have that scenario. When brilliant experts keep losing deals because of their presence and their messages are muddy, how do you reframe their identity to help them build a simple structure to own the room, which is the name of your book, by the way, own the room in the first few minutes so that the buyer clearly feels that this is the person I want to lead me? That's a long question.
It is.
But given, you know, your book you're releasing in this particular scenario, and this could apply to every salesperson who's also an expert in their field, by the way, how do you start to handle that as a coach and a consultant to better those conversations?
You said the key word, and most of it is presence. And I think the biggest misconception that people have when I go to coach them is that I decide my presence when we talk for the first time. So when you and I meet face to face, that's the first impression. Could not be farther from the truth. One of the great social psychologists, Robert Cialdini, used the term persuasion. What happens before persuading them is you're persuading them. And all that comes in your presence on LinkedIn, social media, your initial emails, your outreach, even, Jeb, how you walk into the room. So I'll give you a quick hint on how everybody can start to build persuasion before they even get into the room, and that's through your headshot. So there's three pieces of the headshot that psychologists have identified that are crucial in establishing trust before you meet. The first is a huge smile. Ear to ear, show a little crow's feet, bonus points for teeth, great smile. Second is posture. Keep your back straight or lean forward a little bit to show interest. But the third piece is my favorite, a slight tilt to the head on your headshot. Psychologists believe that when you're exposing your carotid or your jugular, you're showing that you trust them with the most vital blood flow in your system. Therefore, they feel a trust back. So big smile, good posture, slight tilt of the head has been clearly shown to establish trust before you even meet. So if you've got a LinkedIn profile of you holding a dog, or you have a LinkedIn profile of you water skiing, don't do it. Get a headshot that has those three things and you have a way to persuade. And Jeb, there's a dozen ways to continue building presence before you walk into a room. Because here's the thing, if they trust you before you even walk in, you've got to flub it pretty bad in order to not make a sale. So your work begins well before the meeting.
Maybe the follow-up question to that is, when I was in the field, in a different scenario than this, it's easy for me and maybe you to say this because we have podcasts and lots of content and I'm doing video and I'm sort of have that built-in kind of process because that's what we do. But when I was selling in the field, when one of the more difficult things is no one knows who you are until you walk in the room. So how have you helped business development professionals learn how to pre-frame, pre-suade people when there's no natural reason for them to know who you are until you walk in the meeting?
So there's a couple of rules of thumb. The first is before you go into a room, ground yourself. And I know this is going to sound really woo-woo, but boy, does this work. Plant your feet firmly on the floor. Feel the ground under your feet. So don't just stand there. Feel the ground pushing against you on your feet. Give a couple of nice box breaths. Four in, hold for four, out for four, hold it out for four. Couple of box breaths. So get yourself all in alignment. Get your signals straight. And when you go in, no matter what they say, do not make it about you. You should have 2 to 5 minutes where it is nothing but discovery. And if they ask about you or your background, say, I'd love to talk about it, but you're my priority. So let's talk about you. 9 times out of 10, when I talk to a company that goes in to do a pitch in a conference room, the first thing they do is they load up their PowerPoint and it's, let me tell you about us. It's not about you. And it hasn't been. If I had my way, I would eliminate PowerPoint from every sales organization. If you make it 2 to 5 minutes about them, there's something cool that happens here, Jeb, and it's chemistry. So if I get you to talk about yourself, and this has been shown through study after study, if I get you to talk about yourself and I get you really involved so you get real honest and trustworthy with me, your brain releases the same neurotransmitters as eating a chocolate cupcake. But here's where the miracle happens. You don't associate that good feeling with a conversation. You associate it with me. And once I create that chemical bond with you, it's going to take a real guided effort to screw up the presentation. Because somebody's going to say, hey, the presentation may not have been dead on, but I liked him and I think we can work with him. So there's a real advantage in that first 2 to 5 minutes. And that, Jeb, is where my 2-10 rule comes in. There is a rule of thumb that says for every 10 minutes you talk, you generate 2 minutes worth of questions in the other person. So in a 60-minute conversation, you're generating about 12 to 15 minutes of questions. And I think if you ever look back at all the presentations you've given, that's probably really close, right? So flip that on its head. Every 2 minutes during a presentation, check in with somebody. So Jeb, did I miss anything so far? Sally, was that clear or should we retrace that? Frank, how does that feel compared to what you're doing now? So any minor check-in every 2 minutes. Then at the end of every 10 minutes, you know what, guys? I have been blabbing a blue streak. And my guess is I missed something. So let me just open up the floor real quick. When you give people that safety to give feedback and ask questions and the room to be honest, you'll be amazed at what you hear. I always joke, if I had a dollar for every time somebody said to me, I don't tell anybody this, but it's giving them that 210 rule. And when I get with an organization with a sales team, I buy them stopwatches. Get that specific for a while, and then it becomes second nature, and it's amazing how much clients open up.
I have no words. It's incredible. I love this framework. I think that it's just so powerful for any conversation that you're having. And I'm doing a podcast here and talking with you, but this rings true, and it's so much more disciplined inside of these sales conversations. It's so strange to be this like pedantic about your sales process, but the way that you go about these things really does change the pH of a room. I've walked into these conference rooms with 6-7 people on their leadership team, you know, looking at this presentation, and they all are looking with negativity bias. We're all looking for the reasons to hate me. Like they're looking for all the reasons to not buy from you. And if you aren't doing everything in your power to maximize your ability to create a connection with them, you're starting off from a really tough position. And so, yes, your presentation could be beautiful. You might not even have the about us slide. Like you could be a good salesperson and go through everything. But if you haven't persuaded, done everything to build warmth within the room to ask them questions, and you sort of just, maybe you didn't even ask questions, maybe nothing happened. You just drank some coffee and made some slight jokes with people and that was fine, but it didn't work. If you didn't give that 2 to 5 minutes what you're talking about, you're at a severe statistical disadvantage. I love this chemical connection. Like you talk about this is from a neuroscience perspective. This is not something that's like we as experts, as consultants go, well, I think you should do this. Like this is truly proven. It's called the self-disclosure loop. You can go take a look at it. When someone starts talking about themselves, I'm doing it right now, we like get this little dopamine hit and it's so nice. And people start to say things like, you know, we've really had a tough year. And then they pause and they look at the rest of the room like, is it okay if I say that?
Right. Was I allowed to say that?
It is so interesting. I think what's more important than like what I love about the way you approach this, and I think that is such a great mindset for sales professionals. We don't sell them things. If you learn in those conversations, no matter where you are, if it's the last deal and you've been working on it for 8 months and you get into that conversation and it's a real one and they start to tell you that they're not your ICP and they're not a perfect fit because this is just never going to work for them and they didn't know it because they were saying yes all along the way and then suddenly you had a real conversation with them, you can get out of that. You can save yourself the heartbreak of a bad client, the heartbreak of doing something that you felt like, well, I sold them into this versus they are making a decision about it. And you relieve yourself of a lot of the pressure that sales professionals typically have, which is close a deal, close a deal, close a deal, close a deal. And then everyone else has to clean up after you. If you do this work, you are both beneficial to the company that you're working for, which is the people who pay you. And then you're also serving your clients. It's the best way to serve everyone. So I love the way you go about this. I've got one more scenario for you, Jake. And this one is a leadership one. So I'm curious to see how you fit this into the leadership world. So it's an overwhelmed new leader and they're way over their head. This is that scenario. So in the leadership layer where you've got an AE who gets promoted to a sales manager as a top AE. So somebody who in business development world, they were top on the leaderboard for the last 2 years. They have really outshined people. They've been consistent. They show up and then they got the promotion, tap on the shoulder. Hey, you're going to be a leader. That's never happened to anybody, right?
This is such a familiar scenario.
And then suddenly, okay, they're doing back-to-back one-on-ones, their pipeline reviews, executive meetings, trying to do coaching in between all of this, trying to keep up with the territories, doing the Salesforce thing or the HubSpot or whatever it is, reports. They still jump in all the time to save deals because they don't quite trust that the reps know how to do what they do because they were Michael Jordan hitting it from, you know, way out in half court and then also like slam dunking it. And that other team is like, they feel like they're trying to get people to pass the ball. But they jump in, they save deals, and the quarterly book looks good, but because they were putting in 90 hours of work. Their team is really scattered. So their meetings feel rushed, tense, sort of just like a brief update and everyone go work. It's not working as an organization. They're sort of a fractured, kind of succeeding up. They're doing well, but not because they're doing well. When a new sales leader is drowning like this and they're trying to lead a team and they're unintentionally broadcasting stress and frustration to the whole team, how do you help them reset their signals and their presence? We talked about this previously, your trigger, that's that first T in strata. And then you also have this presence piece. And we just finished that conversation. The sales manager is working for these sales reps. How do they start to build that world in a better place?
I think part of it, you know, we always talk about the best way to flatter someone is to say, hey, your hair looks nice, or hey, what a great outfit. But the best way to flatter somebody is actually by asking their advice. And the best way to get people involved is by taking their advice, right? Some people call it the IKEA method. So when you build something together, you're more invested in it, right? So with a sales team like that, and I actually, it's funny, I coached a team like this. So when I coached him, the first thing I did was I said to him, listen, we've been working together for a little bit. Do me a favor and just spill out. What are the problems we have? And if you were in my shoes, what would you do differently? And start to get them to give feedback. Now, granted, people are going to say, hey, Jake, it's not going to be productive. It's going to be the most productive conversation you've ever had. Because when you start asking what they would do differently, even if it's not great advice, pull little pieces of things that you can do and show them that their advice is being taken. In my opinion, worst thing you can do on a team is to say, I'm the leader, you're the followers. It's got to be, I'm the leader because you guys have faith in me here and because I'm actually doing what's best for the team. So if I can start to inject little micro wins into my leadership, and Jeb, there's going to be a bunch of good ideas that come out. You're going to get some people that are going to say things and you're going to go, yeah, wow, I probably should have thought of that. So get them invested. And then what happens is they see that you take advice, you're a listener, and all of a sudden we're back to that other scenario we had where, hey, you may not be the greatest, but I like you and you're trying and you're asking for input. So I'm going to work with you. You know, there's a lot to be said for taking feedback from a team. Here's a great real life scenario. A five-star hotel chain, I won't mention who it was, five-star hotel chain was getting a lot of feedback that their elevators were too slow. So they started looking into putting in elevators. One goes to the first 10 floors, another one goes 10 to 20. They were looking at putting elevators outside the building. All of it would cost millions upon millions. So the CEO got everybody together in the hotel and said, how do we fix this? And one maid said, why don't you put mirrors on the outside of the elevators? Then people will be so busy primping themselves and looking in the mirror that the wait will seem like nothing. Tell me the last time you walked into a hotel or motel that didn't have mirrors next to the elevators.
Whoa.
So when you start to bring...
I feel lied to, by the way. You just revealed something. I feel like I got scammed. Did y'all know that there were mirrors next to the elevators for your own vanity? I feel gross, but I don't disagree with it somehow.
So when you ask for other people's input like that and you become a team, it's amazing how much the dynamic changes. So my advice is to new leaders, put your armor on, put your big boy or girl pants on, get in there, ask for feedback, and give your team micro wins so that they become a team.
The way you've outlined this is a really practical way to just say servant leader. When you walk into that room, the challenge that most leaders have, and I definitely struggle with this as well, is I am the leader and you are the followers. Because there are times and places where you need to be the leader and they are the followers. But in most cases, you are working with people. And in fact, you are working for those people to remove obstacles out of their way, to help them be successful in their jobs. And that's how you become successful as a leader. And if you walk into the room and say, look, I am here because the company and you all trust me to be a leader, my first step is let's figure out what you would do in my shoes so that I can learn from you and build a better environment for us to all succeed in. And I don't know, Jake, you outlined this, so you know this, but I don't know if you're aware that when you ask someone for their opinion, they always have one.
Oh, yeah.
There's not one person on this earth that doesn't want to share their opinion with you. And it's because the most insatiable human need that we have is to feel important. And when you give people that gift, it is so powerful. I love your advice here around how overwhelmed sales leader can slow the world and slow the game down around them and start to build a better communication environment.
Just real quick, Jeb, think about the buy-in. So let's say somebody says to you as a leader, you know what, Jeb, you should wear a green shirt. So if you ever wore a green shirt, that person can never say to you, why would you wear a green shirt? That's just dumb, right? If you start to take what they're saying, and granted, it's not always going to be great, but you can always find that little micro piece of advice that's in there that you can take and incorporate. So as soon as they give you advice, they can't criticize you for following it. As a matter of fact, they admire you, and that's a shift in dynamic.
I think that there's so much more we can explore, Jake. I want to give you, though, a little bit of space here to tell people where to find your book and where to connect with you so they can learn from you.
Thank you. So my new book is called Own the Room, How to Communicate to Be Seen, Heard, and Respected. and it covers my Strata framework, which teaches you how to take a conversation from the point of first encountering them in whatever way that is, on LinkedIn or the first time you walk into a room, and getting a person to take action. So it goes through worksheets and exercises you can do, all real life stories, all coaching I've done. There's even a bonus chapter about a timeshare person trying to sell me and what they did wrong and how I would have done it differently. So a lot of great advice in there. It's available on Amazon right now. They can also listen to my Own the Room podcast, which comes out. We have weekly episodes. I have the Own the Room newsletter on LinkedIn. And if you want to follow me on social media, my handle is Jake the Mind Mechanic.
Jake the Mind Mechanic. You're awesome. Thanks for spending some time with us on the Sales Gravy Podcast. Look, I know you are listening, and if you've gotten this far and you're still listening and you haven't given us a review on Spotify or Apple or on YouTube, you need to go do that now. You are our marketing department. You help us help more salespeople sell more. So go to Spotify and Apple, give us a 5-star review, write a little comment about how we've helped you or what you like the most about the podcast. And I also want to encourage you to go to youtube.com/salesgravy. Give us a like, subscribe to the channel. We are putting all of this video content up. You can go there, ring that little bell so that you get updates whenever we release new videos. And if you haven't checked out Sales Gravy University, use code FREECOURSE. That's learn.salesgravy.com. Thank you so much, Jake, for being here on the Sales Gravy Podcast, and we will catch you next time. Nooks brings prospecting, emailing, and parallel dialing into one single workflow. Their AI agents handle the busy work so your reps can focus on what matters, live conversations. Stop wasting up to 80% of the day stitching tools together and start hitting your numbers with Nooks. Go to nooks.ai to see how artificial intelligence plus human intelligence equals more pipeline. That's nooks.ai, N-O-O-K-S.ai.